Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I think we'll just try and get started so that the next sessions are not running late on my account. Welcome to Is There a Method to the Mitzvah Madness session. So, when we talk about mitzvos and the observance of mitzvos, there are really a lot of different aspects that we could touch upon. But what I wanted to do today is really touch upon one particular question, and I'm going to actually pose it to the group, so we'll get a little bit of participation from the audience members, perhaps. The question I wanted to ask, and I'm not the first person to ask this question, this is a question that's been pondered, that's very loud, for many generations. The question is, we have 613 mitzvos, right? A lot of mitzvos. And when you think about the mitzvos, So there are some extra source sheets in the back. If they're not, just let me know. I'll send some back. So you think about the mitzvos. So sometimes you might wonder, well, why is it that God commanded me to do this particular mitzvah at this time or this particular mitzvah at that time? Why do I shake the lulav on Sukkot? Is there a reason for shaking a lulav? Why a lulav? Why not some other tree? Right when I want to eat meat, so I have to shecht an animal, so you have to do it in a very particular way. So why do I shecht the animal? Why do I kill the animal through this form of shechita as opposed to in any other form of killing an animal, right? There are many, many mitzvos that have a lot of details. And is there a reason? Is there something deeper beyond... You know, this is very loud. Does anyone mind if I just turn it off?
It's loud.
It's not so warm in here. It's nice in here. Okay. So... when it comes to any particular mitzvah and the details of that mitzvah, so is there a reason for it? Right? So what's the alternative? The alternative is that, well, we have 613 mitzvos, and they're all arbitrary, right? God decided, woke up one morning, and decided, well, all right, so let's command the people to do this, let's command the people to do that, and there's really no rhyme or reason behind either any mitzvah or any detail of the mitzvahs. It's just totally arbitrary. So if I were to pose this question to the group right here, take 30 seconds to see if anyone has a comment or a thought. So if I were to ask you this question, so do the mitzvos have reasons or not? So what would you say?
Yes, they do. Yes.
I would say yes.
Okay, so I hear a lot of yeses, and I heard one in the back. I heard some do and some don't.
Some seem to and some seem not to.
Okay, some seem to and some seem not to. So they all have reasons. Okay, great. So we've got a few different... Yes?
I think it's also somewhat analogous to marriage. It's like a person's married to a person, so they don't have to reestablish trust all the time, or should not have to, that the person isn't trying to poison them, that the person isn't trying to... I'm saying ideally. And we do say, ve'erastich li la'olam, that Hashem, that the relationship of Kalal Yisrael Knesset Yisrael and Hashem is a husband and wife. So we should have a certain amount of trust that the things we're being asked to do don't have to be questioned like a 5-year-old each time. Why do I have to do this?
Okay, that's a great point, and we're going to come back to an idea like that at the end, actually, because it's a very important idea to keep in mind throughout the journey through this question, because it's true that we need to keep a proper perspective. But in terms of whether or not, well, is there an underlying assumption that, well, we're being asked to do something for a reason or not, right? So that's, where does that come into play? So why would it be, like, intuitively, intuitively there should be reasons for mitzvos. I think that there should be mitzvos. If you would have that opinion, so why would you think that?
Make it easier to do the mitzvah.
Okay, so number one, if I understand what I'm doing so it would make it easier to perform it, I might have more of a motivation to actually perform something that I understand why I'm doing it. Okay, that's any other thoughts? Why would we say there are reasons for mitzvos?
Why would you be commanded to do that?
Right, it's sort of uncomfortable to think that, well, I have this God who cares about me and who was concerned for my well-being and who's giving me a guidebook of how to live my life. It'd be a little bit uncomfortable to say, well, that whole thing is just random, right? That's a little bit uncomfortable. So now, how would you justify Now, I don't think, the truth is, no one actually said that there are no reasons for mitzvos, right? No one actually thought there are no reasons for any mitzvos, right? Everybody thought, at least for a portion of the mitzvos, there are reasons. Some people said, well, for some mitzvos, there aren't reasons. That was an opinion out there. So is that comfortable to think that, well, most of the things God wants me to do, he has a reason for it? There are a few things which are random. So that's a little bit uncomfortable also, I would say, right? A little bit funny. But so if that's true, if it's indeed true that either no mitzvos have any reasons, or if at least some of the mitzvos don't have any reasons, so how can I fathom that? How can I sort of, you know, introduce that into my worldview? How could I justify that sort of perspective? Yeah. Okay, so one way of doing it is to say, well, no, there are reasons, it's just that it's not for us to know, or we're not capable of knowing it. That's, right, that's...
Understanding.
Right.
As a parent, when you say to your child, I'm the mom, and this is what you have to do, and I don't have to always...
I don't always... Okay. Right, so on the other hand, right, we're the children, our minds are childish and immature compared to the infinite knowledge and wisdom of God. So to say that God commands us to do X, Y, or Z, and we don't understand that, well, maybe we should say, okay, we don't have to understand everything that's being asked of us. Maybe we're not capable of understanding, right? Whether there are, whatever the ramifications of our actions and our deeds are, whatever the ramifications of the mitzvos are, well, that's not for us to understand. We do it because I told you so. So that's great. I'm happy everybody sort of got out all these different possibilities, because now when we go through some key texts, some key sources, both in the Gemaras in Chazal and through some of the commentators, some of the Rishonim, so I think we'll see how a lot of these comments that were made really play out, and we'll try and see how that can be meaningful for us. So, is there a source sheet back there?
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Okay. So let's take a look, and let's just get a sense to see what's out there. Let's just take a look at a few different comments by our sages in Chazal to get a sense of whether or not they thought mitzvos had reasons or didn't have reasons. So if you look, the first source is the Gemara in Brachos. It's on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis 33b. And the Gemara is commenting on a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if somebody gets up in shul and is davening on behalf of the entire congregation, and he says, you know, I'm going to ask God for some compassion. So he says, you know, I'm going to bring a metaphor, and I'm going to say, God, have compassion on the Jewish people the same way you have compassion on the mother bird. Because what do we have to do if we want to take the eggs of the mother bird? What does the Torah tell us? You have to shoo away the mother bird. So God, so if I'm davening on behalf of the congregation, and I say to Hashem, please have compassion on this people, on this congregation, the same way you have compassion on the mother bird when we shoo her away to take her eggs. So know what the Mishnah says? You have to silence that person. Tell that person he's not permitted to daven on behalf of the congregation. That's not an acceptable metaphor to bring. So the Gemara says, wait a second, what's so bad, right? That's very nice. I'm asking God for compassion on behalf of the Jewish people. So what's wrong with that? So the Gemara says here in source number one, Al kan sipor yagiu rachamecha. If you ask Hashem, please have compassion, just like you have compassion on the birds, so you have to silence him. My time, oh, why is that? So pligi batre amoroi. There's a machlokes. There was a disagreement between two amoroyim, b'ma'arava, Reb Yossi bar Avin, v'Reb Yossi bar Zveda. Two Reb Yossis, different fathers. Two Reb Yossis argued about why is it so bad to say, have compassion on Jewish people the same way you have compassion on the mother bird. Chad amar mipnei, shem matil kina b'masa b'reishis. So one person says, the reason it's so bad to say this is because, well, if I remind God, if I remind the world that there's one commandment that says you have to shoo away the mother bird in order to have compassion on the mother bird before taking her eggs, so, you know, the rest of the animals are going to hear, oh, look, God was so compassionate to the birds, right? You have to shoo the mother bird away before you take the eggs. Well, where are all the mitzvos commanding people to be compassionate to me? Well, to me, as whatever animal you're talking about, or to other people, what's so special about the birds that God is so compassionate? So people are going to get upset, or animals will get upset. There's going to be jealousy in the air if you remind or you talk about how there's compassion for the birds. That's one opinion. That's why it's so bad. That doesn't really have anything to do with our question, right? But look at the second opinion. V'chad amar, mipnei she'osem midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachamim ve'enon el gezeros. So you have a very blanket statement here The Gemara says, well, if I take the liberty to say, God, have compassion on the Jewish people the same way you have compassion on the bird, so what am I doing? What am I assuming?
Giving a tom instead of just being sincere.
Right. I'm assuming the reason why I have to send away the mother bird is because God wants to be compassionate towards the mother bird. That's why I'm doing it. So just like you want to be compassionate to the mother bird, so be compassionate towards us. Who said there's compassion is part of that mitzvah? Who said that that's the reason for that mitzvah? By me ascribing that reason to the mitzvah, so I myself am taking the liberty and explaining the reason behind a mitzvah. And the Gemara says, mitzvahs don't have reasons. You don't do mitzvahs because they're compassionate or for any other reason. You do them because they're decrees. When the king says, you jump, you say, how high? So that's source number one. Now, we should just note that the other opinion, who said the reason that we silence this individual is because we don't want to bring about jealousy, so maybe he doesn't think it's such a problem to give a reason for the mitzvah, right? Maybe that's why, we don't know if that's their argument, but at least there's an opinion out there who didn't say this is a problem. Maybe that opinion thinks maybe there are reasons for mitzvahs, and it's okay to ascribe reasons for mitzvahs. Okay, source number two. This is a medrash in Parshas Lech Lecha. And the Medrash says, Rav Amar lo nisnu ha-mitzvos el litzarif bohem esabrios. So the mitzvos were only given for one reason. What were the mitzvos given for? Litzarif. Litzarif means to purify. So the mitzvos were given to purify the creations. So at first glance, again, this seems to be saying, there's a general reason why God gave us mitzvos, and that is because there's something good about just listening to God. It's going to be purifying to us. If we listen to God, right, God tells us what to do, we listen to it, that's purifying for us. Right? And it goes on to explain. V'chima ich b'slei l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, l'mi sheshochet min ha-tzavar, mi sheshochet min ha-oref, ha-ve-lo nasnu ha-mitzos el etzarif ha-mesabrios. Right? Does God really care when I do shlita? If I cut on the neck, I cut behind the neck, if I use this type of knife, I use that type of knife, so many details. Does God really care? So it must be, no, God doesn't care. This is petty. God doesn't care if I shecht it from the front, from the back. You kill the animal. Do it in a nice way, maybe. Maybe there should be some compassion involved. Maybe there shouldn't. You kill the animal. You eat the animal. God really cares? So the Medrash says, yeah, you see that the only reason for the mitzvos is it's purifying for us to have a guidebook, to have laws, to have demands that we have to listen to God. That's a purifying, by going through and observing those processes, so then we're purifying our own selves. Okay, so that's source number two. So again, it sounds like real reasons for mitzvos. Again, we have another source, not so much. But yeah?
In the case of shkita, each of the actions lessen the pain for the animal, so it's hard to just treat that.
Correct, so the Medrash saying, listen, does God really care how you, if you do it this way, you do it that way? It sounds like the Medrash is saying, we're not talking about, well, which is more painful or which is less painful. We're not trying to ascribe a reason. We're saying, listen, God gives us details. God gives us mitzvos. We do it because we listen, because that's purifying. That's a beneficial act for people to have authority and to listen to authority. That's a purifying thing.
But they're ignoring the plain meaning of.
Well, that's what the matter is saying, is that there is no meaning. There is no reason. To say that it's to make sure the animal is not hurt. That's not. Right? If that was the case, so the Medrash wouldn't say there's no reason for the mitzvos. They'd say, no, we shecht it because that's the least painful. The Medrash doesn't say that, so the Medrash seems to be assuming that there are no reasons for mitzvos.
I thought you were going to go in a different direction, or the Gemara would go in a different direction, because the tzareif also means to join. And when you have multitudes doing the same mitzvah, it brings hadar melech, that it's not just, okay, you cut the, you know,
right, so there are some who say, there is a discussion, what does Litzareif in this context mean? So yeah, you could say Litzareif means Jewish, but again, in terms of the reason behind it, there's still each particular detail, each particular mitzvah doesn't have its own reason. These are all things that God commanded. Yeah, there are benefits. Yeah, it's good to listen to authority. It's good, yeah, it brings people together. You have a communal group that brings honor to God. But when you ask about each individual mitzvah, it's a little bit less extreme here, because at least there's some reason in the sense that there's some benefits, but it's still, the mitzvahs are more or less arbitrary. So the third source that we want to talk about before we get into the details is what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Mipnei ma lo nisgalu tamei Torah. So the Gemara says, wait a second, why is it that we have this Torah, we have all these mitzvos, and God didn't reveal the reasons for the mitzvos? So already a light bulb's going off in our head, right? What are we thinking? Well, wait a second. What's the Gemara assuming?
That there are reasons.
Right, there are reasons, right? The question is, why were the reasons not revealed to us? There are reasons, we just don't know them. So now the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why. Because there are some mitzvos where the Torah actually does tell us why we should do X or not do X. Like, for example, the Torah says, the king shouldn't have too many wives. And we had Shlomo Melech, he says, I'm not going to have too many wives, right? The Torah says if you have too many wives, it's going to end up leading the king astray, right? He's going to end up going and not performing his duties properly. He's going to end up sinning. So Shlomo says, listen, I can have a lot of wives, and I'm going to be okay. And what happens? Not okay, right? It says, the king shouldn't have too many horses, because you have horses, you had to get them from Mitzrayim or something like that. So if you have too many horses, you're going to be spending too much time in Egypt. So you don't have too many horses. Again, right? The Gemara says, Shlomo Melech says, I'm going to be okay. I can have a lot of horses. I'm not going to have to go back to Mitzrayim. I'll have servants go back to Mitzrayim. I don't know how I'll get them. Whatever it is, I'll be okay. And the Gemara says, and you see, it ended up being no good for him. So you give reasons for mitzvah. So what does that do? So yeah, there are reasons, but if you reveal them, so then there's a downside, right? That means, well, maybe everyone can start thinking, oh, wait a second. Does this reason apply to me? Does it not apply to me? Does it apply in this circumstance? Does it not apply in this circumstance? So every single person is going to, on their own, just decide, oh, I don't have to do this mitzvah, I don't do that mitzvah, I'll do this mitzvah this way. This reason makes sense for this person, doesn't make sense for me. So it'll lead to a poor performance of the mitzvahs. So therefore, we're not going to tell them. But there are reasons for the mitzvahs, according to this Gemara. So you see that if you look through the statements of our sages, of Chazal, and the Gemara and the Midrashim, so you see that there's evidence on both sides, right? Are there reasons for mitzvos, or are there not reasons for mitzvos? Which, of course, is great foundation for more arguments. So now we have different opinions in the later generations, in the Rishonim, who chime in on this question. It's very relevant to this past week's Parsha, right? This past week's Parsha, Parsha Slukas, so we talk about the quintessential chok, right? The mitzvah that we have no idea what's going on, the Parah Aduma. So we'll see. We'll move on now. We're not going to mention so much about the Parah Aduma, but we'll see that this really comes up in the context of Chukim. So let's take a look at the different interpretations of the Rishon. If you look at source number 4, the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayikra, in Sefer Vayikra, Eschukosai tishmoru behemtecholo sarbia kilayim, sadcholo sizra kilayim, uveget kilayim shatnez lo yale alecha. In the context of mixing things that are not, the Torah says there are certain things that you can't mix. So the Torah introduces this notion, it's called kilayim, called shatnez, right? The thing you can't mix wool and linen, you can't have different sorts, species of animals crossbreeding, you can't graft certain types of vegetation. So the Torah says, eschukosai tishmoru, right? Someone said, well, there are some mitzvos that we do have reasons and some mitzvos that don't have reasons. So the mitzvos that we generally associate with not having any reasons are called chukim, right? They're just laws, they're rules, we don't understand them. So listen to my chukim, don't wear wool and linen, don't breed these animals together, don't mix these sorts of plants together. So what does Rashi say? Eschukosai tishmoru, ve'elohein behemtecholot sarbiya kilayim v'gomer, right? These lists of mitzvos in this pasuk are examples of chukim. Chukim elu gezeros melech she'ein tam l'davar. What is a chok? A mitzvah that doesn't have a reason. But Rashi goes further, because look at Rashi on source number 5, which is Rashi on the Gemara that we started with, right? The Gemara said, the reason you can't say be compassionate to the Jewish people like you're compassionate to the bird is because if you do that, you are ascribing reasons to God's mitzvos. So look at what Rashi says. So the Gemara used a funny word. The Gemara said, you're ascribing, Rashi says, she'osem midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rachamim, you're saying that God is compassionate, and really, you can't shoo away the mother bird because it's just a decree. So Rashi says, what does the word midosav mean? So Rashi says, midosav means mitzvosav. You're giving reasons for his mitzvahs. You're saying the reason for not shooing away the mother bird is because you're going to be compassionate. V'hi lo l'rachamim asa. Right? It's not for compassion. Right? The mitzvah of sending away the mother bird is not for compassion. Elahatil al Yisrael chukei gezerosav. It's an example of a king, of God, imposing the laws, his decrees upon us. Lohodia shehem avadav, v'shomrei mitzvosav, to tell us that we're his servants and we accept and we observe his commandments. Ugezeros tekanosav. Even things that don't seem to make any sense. And the non-Jews are going to tell you, they're coming to you and say, what are you doing? You crazy? It makes no sense to not wear wool and linen together. What's the reason for that? They're going to make fun of us. They're going to deride us. Nonetheless, we do it anyway because that's what God commanded. So this Rashi, what's important about it, is that he's not just talking about a chok, right? Rashi in Sefer Vayikra says their chukim don't have reasons. But on the Gemara, when he says that if you say that God's mitzvot are for compassion, they're really decrees, Rashi's not just talking about chukim, right? What's Rashi talking about? All mitzvot. Right? So this is the most extreme formulation. No one in the room, when I asked, do you think there are reasons for mitzvot or no reasons? No one said no mitzvot have reasons. Everybody said at least some mitzvot have reasons. There might be some that don't. So you see, Rashi takes a very extreme position that mitzvot do not have reasons. They are the decrees, and you follow them because you listen to the law of the king. So it doesn't contradict, because Rashi says in Vayikra is that chukim elu, these chukim, which is all that's being spoken about in Vayikra, is that these things don't have reasons. You're correct that when you read this Rashi, you would probably intuitively think, well, you know, back to what we grow up learning, right? There's chukim and mishpatim. Chukim don't have reasons, mishpatim do have reasons. So this Rashi seems just fits very nicely with that conception, but he doesn't really mention the other things. He's only talking about chukim. You're correct. If you would read this, I would have never said from Rashi in Vayikra that he would be that extreme. But based on the Rashi in the Gemara and Brachos, where he says his comments more generally, so it seems like what Rashi's telling you is that, yeah, they're really, ultimately, when it comes down to it, no mitzvahs have reasons. That's what it sounds like. Which is an extreme position. The other side of the spectrum is the Rambam. So I quoted for you here a few excerpts from the Rambam in his Mor Nevuchim, The Guide to the Perplexed, where the Rambam is a huge proponent of mitzvahs having reasons, right? He's the opposite extreme. Why is he the opposite extreme? Because the Rambam says that the truth is that even chukim, right, even the mitzvos that seem to make no sense, a parah aduma, not mixing wool and linen in the same garment, right, whatever other chukim you want to come up with, even the chukim, the Rambam says, do have reasons. They're less apparent, right, they're harder for us to understand, right, it's easy for us to say, yeah, I understand we should not murder, right? We shouldn't steal, we should listen to our parents. You can have a whole list of mitzvos that are very easy for us to understand. So Rashi says, yeah, those mitzvos, there are no reasons for them. Rambam says the opposite. Things even you don't understand, there are reasons for. So if you read through the third section of the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim, so a lot of what he's doing is actually going through different details of different mitzvos and explaining to you what the reasons could be for those mitzvos. That's part of what the Rambam does. The Ramban also, throughout his commentary on the Chumash, also does that. He tries very hard to explain to us what are the different reasons for different mitzvos. That's not going to be the subject of our talk today, going through different mitzvos and explaining their reasons, but the concept is what we want to see, that the Rambam says very clearly. I'll just read to you the first part of source number 6. We're not going to have enough time to read the whole thing, but if you want, you can read it on your own. So the Rambam says, as theologians are divided on the question whether the actions of God are the result of his wisdom or only of his will without being intended for any purpose whatever, so they are also divided as regards the object of the commandments which God gave us. So the first sentence we're not going to get into just because I don't want to take the time to, but there's a whole discussion, there's a philosophical discussion when the world was created. Was that God intended to create the world? Right? There are different types of actions. There are arbitrary actions, there are purposeful actions, all these different sorts of actions. So the Rambam goes to this whole discussion, is the creation of the world a purposeful creation, or was it sort of a whimsical creation? It's a funny question, but we're going to leave that aside. But anyway, just like if you're going to discuss, well, whether or not, you know, God's actions when he was creating the world, was that the result of wisdom, like pre-thought-out, intended action, or was it more whimsical? So too, when it comes to the commandments, there's a discussion. Are they purposeful or are they not purposeful? And so the Rambam says that goes through. Some people say there's no reason, but the Rambam says, no, they're clearly that Others are the opinion that all commandments and prohibitions are dictated by his wisdom and serve a certain aim. Consequently, there is a reason for each one of the precepts. They are enjoined because they are useful. Right? He says every mitzvah has a reason. There's a utility for every single one of them. Okay, so then he goes through and tries to prove that that's the case. So just, if you want to take the perspective that there are reasons for the mitzvahs, so the Rambam finds himself in a little bit of a catch-22, because on the one hand, he says there's got to be reasons, right? It can't be that there's a God who's doing things for no purpose. But you have all these statements in Chazal that we started with that assume that there are no reasons, right? So the Rambam's what, throwing Gemaras out the window and throwing Midrashim out the window and saying they don't exist, they're not true. So he goes through, I'm not going to read it inside, but in source number 7 and number 8, he actually goes through and explains each of those sources. So I'll just tell you outside what he says. So we said that the Gemara in Brachos says that if someone gets up in Davins and says, be compassionate to the Jewish people like you're compassionate to the mother bird, that's a problem because he ascribed a reason to shooing away the mother bird. So what's Rambam going to say to that? So in the Marne Buchim, here in source number 7, he says, we follow the other opinion. We don't hold like that opinion. There's another opinion in the Gemara. We follow that opinion. Just to put it out there, in the Ram, this the Marne Buchim is the Rambam's philosophical work, not the work where he paskins or gives halachic rulings. So if you look at his halachic work, which is the Yad HaZaka, the Mishnah Torah, so if you look in there when he quotes this halacha, he says someone who gets up to daven for the Amud and he's davening and he says this metaphor, we should be compassionate just like you shoo away the mother birds. So you know what the Rambam says? You silence him. Why? Because you're not allowed to give reasons for the mitzvos. So the opinion that we don't follow in halacha, that's what the Rambam quotes for halacha. So there's a whole discussion, what does the Rambam mean by that? The easiest answer is that when the Rambam paskins that halacha, he's not saying that there are no reasons to the mitzvos. He's saying it's inappropriate in the context of davening to invoke the reason for mitzvos in order to elicit compassion from God. There are reasons for mitzvos. Davening is not the time for you to tell God, by the way, you know what you commanded us for this reason? Well, be consistent. And, you know, that's a chutzpidik sort of way to daven to God. So maybe that's an easy answer. But that's a whole discussion, why he says we follow the other opinion, and then he quotes the opinion that he rejects. But, okay, put that aside. So that's what he says about the Gemara Brachos. What does the Rambam say about the Medrash? The Medrash says, does God really care if I shecht the animal like this, I shecht the animal like that? Right? God doesn't care. What's the difference? Just, the point is, he wants us to listen to him. So that makes it sound like there are no reasons for mitzvos. So the Rambam in source number 8, he says, my opinion might be a little bit extreme. I told you every mitzvah has a reason, even the ones we don't understand. He says, well, you know, what I really meant was that, generally speaking, every mitzvah has a reason, but within each mitzvah, there are a lot of details. So then we have a mitzvah to shecht an animal if we want to eat it. So that there's a reason for, and he'll talk about being compassionate, etc., etc. If you shecht it at this part of the neck, or that part of the neck, or the front, or the back, so there the Rambam says, the details of every mitzvah, not every single detail has to have a reason, the mitzvah as a whole has a reason, but the details, so some details could be arbitrary. So he admits to at least that. But anyway, you see a very extreme machlokes, a disagreement between the Rambam and the Rashi. When we talk about the mitzvahs having reasons, is there some sort of meaning behind the mitzvahs? Is there some reason behind the commandments? So Rashi says, no, we do them because we're commanded to. The Rambam says, yes, we do them because we're commanded to, but they happen to also have purposeful reasons. When it comes to details, maybe there are some details which you can't necessarily explain. Okay. There's an opinion of Rav Sajigon, which is what somebody mentioned earlier, I don't remember who, but somebody mentioned the notion of, well, some mitzvahs have reasons and some mitzvahs don't have reasons, which is probably what many of us remember learning when we were younger, that there are hukim and mishpatim. So Rav Sajja Gaon says, do mitzvahs have reasons? Well, it depends. Some mitzvahs are logical, they have reasons, and some mitzvahs don't. So you have a whole slew of different opinions on this matter. Okay, great. If there are any questions, we can take them now for a minute. If not, we can move on to one interesting application of this whole question. Okay. Take it that there are no questions. So why do I care? Why do I care if the mitzvahs have reasons or they don't have reasons? Does it have any impact on halacha? Is there ever, does it matter, right? If their mitzvahs have reasons, so we know that I can't just say, oh, this reason doesn't apply to me, so I'm going to throw this mitzvah out the window, right? That's not an acceptable position. So what's the whole big deal here? So if you look at source number 11 on page 5, and again, we're not going to be able to read, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to read this inside because of timing constraints, but there's an age-old question that the Rambam brings up in a different one of his works. So we've talked about the Rambam in the Mar Nebuchim, his philosophical work. We talked about the Rambam in his halachic work, the Yad HaChazaka. So there's another book that's authored by the Rambam, which is called Shmona Prakim. And that's his introduction to Perkei Avos. So in the Shmona Prakim, the Rambam quotes an age-old philosophical discussion, which is the good old question. When you walk by McDonald's and you smell that cheeseburger and you say, I can't eat it, so what's the more praiseworthy approach? To say, oh, cheeseburger, that's the most disgusting thing I could ever imagine. It's so treif, I could never imagine eating that cheeseburger. I don't even want to eat that cheeseburger. So is that, do we say, oh, that's the best approach? It should be so disgusting to you because it's not kosher that you don't even want to eat it. So is that better? Or is it better to say, wow, that smells delicious. I really would love to have that cheeseburger, but what can I do? God commanded me I can't, so I'm not going to. So what's the more praiseworthy approach in life? That we want to do Averos, right? We want to do the things that we're not allowed to do, but we hold ourselves back? Or no, they've become so ingrained within us that we can't even imagine desiring to do the sin. So that's an age-old philosophical discussion that the Rambam quotes. And the Rambam says, if you look in different statements in Chazal, you'll see that, well, sometimes it sounds like it's better to want to do it and not to do it, and sometimes it's better to not want to do it in the first place. So the Rambam says, what's going on? So he says, well, the answer to this, the Rambam says, well, it depends. It depends on whether or not the mitzvah, right? All mitzvahs have reasons. If it's a mitzvah where the reason is right, if the mitzvah is the reason is very relevant, it's very easily apparent, right? Which we would call a mishpat, right? So a mitzvah that we really understand. So that sort of mitzvah, says the Rambam, you should actually ingrain in your soul, right, in your heart, in your mind. It should become a part of you so much so that you don't even have a desire to do otherwise. Right, something we understand, right? I should not be walking around saying, oh, I really want to murder that person, but what am I going to do? God told me I can't murder. No. Murder is obviously such a heinous act that it is totally unacceptable. It should be part of who I am, the fabric of my being, that murder is not something I ever contemplate. Because the reason that I shouldn't murder is so obvious. But, says the Rambam, some other mitzvos, like, for example, maybe mixing milk and meat together, right? That's not so obvious why I can't mix milk and meat together. Why not? It's a big deal. So I don't do it because God commands me. But there's some reason that God commands me not to do it, right? So that sort of mitzvah, says the Rambam, it's understandable if you want to do it, but you hold yourself back from doing it. That's what the Rambam says. So if you think about it, the Rambam's position, and we'll see that this only can work for the Rambam, this I heard from a Rebbe of mine when I was learning in Israel, when I was for a year in my smicha, I was learning in why use kol in Israel. So there's a Rebbe there, Rav Asaf Bednarsh, who I heard this point from. It's a very sharp point. The Rambam says that some mitzvos should really be inculcated within who we are. It should become part of the fabric of our being, that it just makes sense and we don't even have a desire to do it. So you can only say that if there's a reason for a mitzvah. Right? If the reason for a mitzvah is, I just want to listen to God, so it should never become that it's logical for me to want, you know, it's logical for me to not want to do something that I don't have a desire whatsoever. The only way it could be logical for me to not even have a desire to do an Aveiro or to do a particular mitzvah is if there's a reason for it. Now, there's some things that I don't understand, so there it makes sense that maybe I'll want to do it, but I'll hold myself back. But the Rambam can only say his position because he thinks that mitzvahs actually have objective reasons. If they have objective reasons, so in that reason I can think about it. Yeah, it makes sense. I shouldn't murder. Right? That's a reasonable thing. Therefore, I never want to murder. But if the reason not to murder had nothing to do with the fact that it's heinous, It's because God told me not to murder. So I don't care how logical it is or isn't. I should never be doing it because of the logic behind the mitzvah. I should only be doing it because God commanded me. But the Rambam says, no, there's some mitzvahs where, since they're logical, you should do it because of the inherent logical reason. Rashi, on the other hand, you'll see, does not take this approach. Rashi in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about returning lost objects. And there's a halacha which we're not going to discuss the details of because it's a little bit politically incorrect, but we have some halachos that are a little politically incorrect. That when it comes to finding a lost object, if that lost object belongs to a non-Jew, there's no mitzvah to return it. In fact, the Mishnah has some harsh statements about someone who goes ahead and returns it anyway. Okay, we're not going to discuss whether or not we should return our lost objects to non-Jews right now. But the Mishnah says, if you return a lost object to a non-Jew, so not such a good thing. So Rashi says, why is that? Now, I'll ask you before I tell you what Rashi says. If you find a lost object, does it make sense that you should return it to its rightful owner?
Yes.
Right, that mitzvah we understand. When I find something that's lost, it's not mine. I have a way of finding out who it belongs to, so it makes sense. I should return it to them. So objectively speaking, if mitzvahs have reasons, so I would say, if you have a lost object, you don't. It's not yours, you know who it is, so you return it to them. So why, if the owner is not Jewish, would I not return to them? Well, only because God commanded me that there's no mitzvah to return a lost object to a non-Jew. Now, that doesn't make sense to me. It does not make sense to me. Maybe if I lived in antiquity or medieval Europe, I might understand that because maybe when I were to return the object to them, they might try to kill me. But right now, it doesn't make sense to me. Objectively speaking, I don't understand how you could blanketly say that you should not ever return a lost object to a non-Jew.
Isn't that a rabbinical... That's not Me'orata.
Well, the returning a lost object is a biblical mitzvah. So the Mishnah learns that does not apply on the biblical. It does not apply to a non-Jew, and it quotes a pasuk to tell you that it's not so. It's not so good. So it's interesting. It's a good question, but it sounds like perhaps even on a biblical level that would not be close. So Rashi says the reason why you can't return a lost object to a non-Jew is because we don't return lost objects to people because we think it's correct. We return lost objects to people because God told us so. When the Rambam quotes this mitzvah, that's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says something that I could understand probably living in the Rambam's age. It says you don't want to return lost objects to non-Jews because you don't want to do good things for evil people. Something of that sort of, right? So the Rambam says, really? Returning a lost object is something that makes sense. I should want to do that because it's a logical mitzvah. So there's an instance where I shouldn't do it. Why not? That doesn't make sense. Well, there's another reason for that. But not like what Rashi says. Where Rashi says, you don't return to the non-Jew because you don't do mitzvahs because they make sense. You do mitzvahs because they are commanded by God. So now that we've kind of touched the surface of this discussion, we'll just end for the last minute. Let's see exactly what time it is. Okay, we have 2 minutes. Okay. So for the last 2 minutes, kind of try and take a step back and to now put this into perspective. So there are mitzvahs that are easily understood. There are mitzvahs that are harder to understand. Right? Even if you're the Rambam and you think all mitzvahs have reasons, there's still, the Rambam says there are some things which are difficult to understand. So what should I do? Should I try and understand these mitzvahs? Should I try to figure out what the mitzvah means? Should I not try to figure it out? So the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Me'ilo, which is the section in the Rambam's halachic work, which deals with different aspects of karbanos, the Rambam tells us a very important, crucial statement, which is what you mentioned earlier in terms of the Eiras Tichli Li'olam. So Rambam says, Roy, it's source number 14 on the back page, Roy la'adam lehisbonein b'mishpatei Torah. It's a good thing for people to think, right? The Rambam was a fan of thinking. It's a good thing to not just go about our daily lives by rote, just doing what we do without any thought. It's a good thing to say, God gave us a Torah. We should really think about it long and hard. What is God commanding us? Why is He commanding us? We should really delve into the reasons for the mitzvos. Roy la'adam lisbonim b'mishpatei ha'Torah ha'kidosha v'lei da'sof inyanam kfi kocho. Every one of us, we have a latent ability to our own. Some of us have a more capability, some of us have less capabilities, but everyone has the capability to think about what is being commanded to us, and we should do that. V'davar shelo yimsa lo tam, But, says the Rambam, just because we don't find a reason, velo yedelo ilo, and you don't really get why God is commanding X, Y, or Z, al yehi kal be'enov. That's not an excuse to say, oh, yeah, that doesn't make sense, so that's a really a minor thing. God didn't really mean that one, or that's not so important, because it doesn't really make sense. Don't allow our own limitations, our own mental limitations in understanding the mitzvos to impact how we perceive any particular mitzvah. Every mitzvah is valuable. Every mitzvah is precious. Every mitzvah has a reason, even if we personally don't understand it. V'lo yaharos lalos al Hashem pen yifrotz bo. And for sure, right, it shouldn't lead us to be heretical or to sort of be angry or frustrated that we don't understand why certain things happened, right? There has to be always this certain perspective. And that's why, if you look at Rav Soloveitchik says in, this was recorded in a Sefer in source number 15, the Rambam goes on and has a whole explanation, but we only have 30 seconds left, so I'll just, you know, skip to source number 15. The Rav Soloveitchik is quoted as saying that, what is this whole area of Jewish thought, whether or not mitzvahs have reasons. So you know what it's called in Hebrew?
Tzidduk HaDin.
So Tzidduk HaDin is God's actions. That's good, right? Do God's actions have a reason? Do the mitzvahs have a reason? It's called Ta'amei HaMitzvos, right? The Ta'am is a reason, right? Well, see, Ta'am also means taste. We'll get to that in a second. Ta'am is the reason for something. So there's a Sefer called the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch was a Rishon. We actually don't know exactly who wrote it. But he goes through all 613 mitzvos, and he tells us all about the mitzvos, and then at the end he says, I'm going to tell you a little bit about why we do this mitzvah. But he doesn't call that endeavor ta'amei ha-mitzvos. He calls it misharshei ha-mitzvah, the roots of the mitzvah. Right? Because the Sefer Achinuch, says Rav Soloveitchik, is avoiding this idea of ta'amei ha-mitzvos, right? What is the whole notion of the reasons for the mitzvos? What does that assume? That assumes that I can ascribe a reason to mitzvahs. I can understand the depth of mitzvah. No one can understand, even though the Rambam says they exist. But we can't understand the depth of mitzvah. We can talk about the shorashim of the mitzvah, the roots of the mishmah. We can get glimpses into the depth of the Torah, but we can't get to the real reason behind the Torah. And that shouldn't, you know, discourage us. That should be something that is motivating to us, inspiring for us. To try to our best of our abilities to really try to understand the Torah the best way possible and to really inculcate it within us and make it a personal experience. In fact, you mentioned that tam means taste, right? So that could be the same sort of idea. Maybe even the phrase tamei hamitzvos isn't so bad, because what's a taste, right? It's a little taste. It's not the full consumption of the item. You taste an item. You have a taste here, a taste there. So tamei ha-mitzvos, right, to think that we should go into to understand mitzvos, for sure we should, but it's just a taste. We always have to realize that the depths are always deeper, and that's really our job, to try and go into those depths and incorporate it into our lives and make it meaningful for us on a personal level in all the mitzvos that we do, and hopefully that will help us in our journeys and our quests for serving God in the best way possible. Thank you for coming.